Chapter 4. Eidolon watched the ships burn and die, though not with the eyes he had once owned. He saw the world in richer colours now, and savoured its agony through a more delicate sensibility. His armour did nothing to impede that. The things the fleshweavers had done to its ancient mechanisms amplified the flood of sensoria, channeling it, filtering out the ephemera, and leaving only the core of it to relish. He stood on the cusp of his teleportation chamber, unwilling to enter the energy-lashed precincts while the observation portals let him witness the truth of what was happening across the Kalium Gate. 50 kilometres away, a mere speck in the geometry of naval warfare, a White Scars destroyer plunged towards the Keystone, its back broken and its flanks aflame. Gunships harried it, ripping up what scant physical plate remained along its hide. The destroyer kept firing all the while, maintaining the barrage while its structure melted and shimmered into atoms. Eidolon could feel the terror coming from that ship. He could smell the raw fear bleeding out of it, sweated from the pores of the gun crew menials and the mortal bridge officers as they did their duty. He mentally placed himself in their position, under those collapsed decks, crushed and maimed, the air escaping through a lattice of shell-ripped gashes. It made his breath quicken.
"I wish it were me," he thought. "I wish all these things were mine."
All around him, his brothers were arrayed for battle. They wore the same armour, what would once have been Mark IV plate, limned with Legion gold, but which now defied all description. Their gorgets and upper torsos were grotesquely large, linked by snaking cables to amplifier clusters lodged amid overlapping sheets of richly decorated ceramite plate. Each warrior carried the same weapon type, exemplars of the cacophony, massive organ guns with bloated echo chambers and psychosonic resonators. Even now, the guns hummed with a deep, deck-shaking harmonic, making loose matter around them jump and tremble. The sonic cults had been the creations of Marius Verusian in the beginning, but had now spread throughout the entire Legion, growing in popularity as their ruinous gifts became more clearly apparent. Eidolon himself, who had embraced the mutations more completely than any other since his resurrection, bore a thunder hammer in his heavy gauntlets, its snarled head flooded with arcane psychic matter. It cast a sick green sheen across the iron of the chamber's outer gates, strobing in rhythm with the beat of the idling organ guns. Still, he waited. Beyond, in the void over Kalium, more ships were torn apart and their inhabitants cast into the vacuum. He watched the foremost White Scars run the gauntlet of fire and saw what it cost them. He saw the ever-loyal Koninos break from the cover of the Necklace's shadow and enter the Dance of Ruin. He watched torpedoes scatter like broken glass amid the whirlwind and knew that every one of them carried a cargo of living warriors. He closed his aching eyes and listened to the sounds. Void or no, they still came to him, ushered across the ether by demon whisperers.
Hold the line, keep up that. By the Emperor, Nadir, more power. Tip 5 points about. Release secondary barrage. Watch for counter-strikes from... Not take this for much longer, Lord. The shell will break. The Prometheus... Oh, no, not yet. What is it? What devils are the...
They were woven like threads, those voices in the depths, each one animated by lusts and desires that were chaff on the face of the immaterium. Soon those speakers would be submerged back within its great tide, no more than fodder for the intelligences that hungrily swam there. "Lord," came von Calder's voice over the comm. Eidolon already knew what his equerry would say, but let the creature speak.
"Yes."
"They will break the cordon," von Calder reported, reluctantly. "They are losing ships, many ships, but we cannot prevent them landing. The Keystone is reinforced, but if he is among them..." Eidolon recognized the faintest catch in his equerry's voice and marked him then for sanction. A Primarch was a Primarch. They were fallible. They had been killed.
"Peace! I will translate," Eidolon told him, marching at last through the iron gates and into the heart of the teleportation chamber.
As he took his place, the cacophony around him saluted, their movements already slurred from combat stims, their helm lenses swimming like burnished mother-of-pearl.
What do you fear, Von Calder? Destruction?
We lose troops here, my commander, Von Calder replied. We know they cannot use the gate. Should we not let them...
Every one of them we kill here strips terror of another defender,
replied Eidolon, sensing the build-up of etheric power in the chamber. Snarls of cold lightning flickered up the columns around him, distorting real space.
And besides, you omit the crucial point.
The air shivered, tensing for the explosion that would turn reality inside out and thrust a living spear of the warp into the realm of the senses. Eidolon hefted his thunderhammer, anticipating the temporary release of translation, the fleeting respite from the living agony of his existence. Which is... Von Calder asked, his voice growing faint as the teleport charge built to the apex. Eidolon smiled.
That we live for this!
Then the chamber filled with light, the sensation snuffed out, and the cacophony was sent across worlds and minds into the howling heart of battle. Shiban crashed the Guandao down, relying on its weight to smash the sword clear. His opponent parried expertly, heedless of the disruptor sparks showering over his armor. All around them, spread out along the chamber's shadowed edges, the fighting continued, now brutal and close range. Beneath their boots, the Tercephalian's engines were whining to full pitch. His enemy was powerful, skilled with the blade, orthodox as all sons of Chemos were, but intelligent with it. Their weapons clashed again, yielding no advantage. They spun apart, moving warily, each looking hard for the chink in an otherwise perfect defense.
What is wrong with you?
Asked his enemy, glancing at his angular limbs, his awkward armor plate. Shiban said nothing, keeping his mind focused. He slashed out, adding venom to the gesture, aiming to take the swordsman at the neck. The Emperor's Children champion retreated, evading the strike, returning quickly to bring his saber to bear.
You move like a machine, his enemy said, dancing back into range with a flurry of strokes. I have killed many of your kind, and they fought more like humans.
We have all been changed,
Shiban grunted, starting to admire the doggedness in his enemy. This one was a step above the other legionaries he had killed, a master of his chosen weapon, an artist.
All of us, I...
They crashed together again, taking strides on their armor as the Guandao and saber ricocheted from one another. Shiban punched out with the heel of his staff, missing the target by a hair's width. Then he had to defend, keeping out the saber's edge only marginally. He took a step back, creating space, making use of the motive power his augmentations gave him.
I too used to fight with art. I too used to make it beautiful.
You are not in sickness,
Shiban observed, the words slipping from his lips almost unbidden.
In sickness.
That was what the Ordu had come to call the multifarious mutations and self-mutilations practiced by the traitor legions. So many were now more beast than man, their genhanced bodies racked and tortured, a willing hell of constant invention. His enemy laughed, a cruel sound.
Like my brothers, you mean? No, not yet. It will come.
Shiban continued the retreat, letting his enemy come after him. From the corner of his eye, he saw his warriors doing the same, just as they had discussed, giving up ground towards the command bridge. Below them all, the engine whine grew in volume.
I will never understand it, Shiban said.
A snort came from his enemy's face mask. The sword blurred around his armor profile like a silver gauze. The blades hit again. Clang, clang, clang.
What can you not understand, savage? That we should wish for something greater? You were offered the gift, and you were too simple to see it. You fight for something already gone. All you have before you is limitation.
The weapons spun around one another, weaving, darting, hammering.
For us, though, for us, limitation has ceased to be a factor.
Shiban reached the foot of the stairway. He felt the strain in the muscles he still retained. Sweat ran down the inner lip of his gorget. His enemy was faster, stronger, more subtle, and he worked the saber as if it weighed nothing.
I would have been faster before. I would have been stronger.
The surviving white scars fell back further, retreating up the stairway step by step. The Emperor's children pursued them, all fighting as perfectly as their master. Stones smashed around them, flung from the balustrades by stray strikes. The engine whine throbbed into a grinding wall of sound, flooding up from the deeps.
"So why did you not seize the chance?"
his enemy asked, sounding genuinely curious.
"You could not have loved terror, not like Dawn's drones. You really had a choice."
Shivan started to breathe hard. The glaive felt heavy in his hands, like a bar of lead. He was taking hits now, peripheral ones, chipping away at the margins of his defense.
"I made my oath."
The laugh again.
"Your oath. I make an oath with every breath."
The portal to the bridge beckoned now, a wide arch crested with the Memnos griffin. Beyond that was the gantry, the bloody servitor pit, the corpse of the shipmaster in her own throne. Shiban saw Jochi fighting hard, now at his shoulder, just as they had been in the canyons on Chondax. There, too, they had been overmatched.
"You make no oaths,"
Shiban rasped, working hard as the saber whipped in. He was dimly aware of the roof opening out above him, soaring up toward the crystal-flecked dome of stars. He heard a muffled cry of pain, one of his brotherhood succumbing to the enemy, another soul lost.
"Not like we do."
A hiss of irritation came from his enemy, who pressed closer, scenting the end. Their weapons locked again, buzzing with feral energy fields.
"Yes, yes, you are finer than we," said the traitor caustically. "We have done what we did because we are weak and vain, and only in you, the doomed defenders of this rotten throne, is their virtue."
They swayed across the gantry, fighting all the time, ceramite flakes now flying in circles around them.
"Your words,"
grunted Shiban, working hard not to get his throat cut out.
"Your arrogance,"
blurted his enemy, stepping up the assault into a new pitch of cold fury.
"My master now walks with gods. You have been lied to, and you know it, and still cleave only to ignorance."
The Chernobyl blade shivered down the glaive shaft, grating up against the weapon's shoulder. Shiban staggered, nearly going down. He was then forced to parry, a crossways brace across his throat as the sword whistled in again.
"Then why not take your new god's gifts?"
Shiban spat out, falling back again.
"What are you scared of?"
His enemy snapped his blade down, pinning the Guandao into Shiban's guard. Their helm masks were a hand's breadth apart, underlit by seething disruptor excess.
"I will take them, and with both hands when the hour comes,"
the Emperor's children champion said, his voice savagely earnest.
"Until then, speak not of things you do not understand." "We know what it is to change,"
Shiban said.
"You know what it is to die. True enough, but not this day."
At that, the engine whine reached its full pitch, making the walls of the bridge shake. Shiban heaved with his arms, throwing his enemy back by a single pace. The Emperor's children legionary reacted instantly, bringing the point of his sword into range, poising to strike into the heart of Shiban's off-balance defense. But the blow never came. The crystal-flecked dome above them shattered, showering a cascade of glittering shards across the entire bridge expanse. The air bubble within burst outwards, thrusting into the void and taking the corpses of the old crew spinning with it. The white scars, prepared for the move, let the tempest carry them. The Emperor's children, acting on instinct, activated the gravlocks on their boots, keeping them clamped to the vibrating deck. The two dueling forces were separated, cast asunder by the racing atmosphere. Above them all, hovering over the jagged edges of the broken dome, hung a 5th Legion Stormbird, its twin-linked bolters pumping out more shells into the ruined bridge space. Shiban twisted his body, reaching out for the open crew bay, his fingers clamping onto the edge. He pulled himself to safety, as did Jochi and two others, all who had made it out. When he next glanced down, For a moment he saw nothing but a swirl of bloody corpses bumping into dislodged debris from the command levels, all of it blown out into the void as the atmosphere streamed into the abyss. Then he saw the swordsman, braced against the command throne, staring up at him.
"White Scar!"
the champion shouted over the maelstrom, disgust evident across the open vox signal.
"I had heard tales of your bravery!"
Shibun said nothing, but dragged himself inside. The Stormbird pulled clear of the disintegrating bridge, back into the heart of the Void War beyond.
"How many of the convoy are taken?"
he asked the pilot, clamping his glaive wearily to the wall-mounted rack.
"All are now in the hands of the enemy,"
came the emotionless reply. Shibun nodded. Across the far side of the crew bay, Jochi leaned against the inner wall, breathing heavily through a damaged vox grill.
"Signal all units to withdraw to the frigates. We make for the void."
He considered moving back to get a final glimpse of the warrior who had bested him so easily. He might have been tempted to salute or offer some word of defiance.
"Not now. I am sick to my soul."
"Enough then,"
he snarled, hitting the controls to raise the ramp.
"Power the engines. Get us out of here."
Perturabo had destroyed the Keystone's impregnability forever, but the defences subsequently installed by the Emperor's children remained formidable. Chain-linked cannons spat out from radial spans placed across the face of the docking levels, clogging local space with interlaced lines of lasfire, which joined the glowing trails of ship-hunting missiles. The 5th Legion had sent their void craft diving and angling through the hail of projectiles. The interceptors came in first, staggered waves of them raking gun placements as they swooped and tilted. The pilots hugged the curving flanks of the Keystone's armoured walls insanely tightly, screaming across adamantium plates while letting loose with their rotary launchers. Soon, the outer shell was aflame, crackling out into the vacuum as gunnery magazines ignited and fuel lines were kindled. After the softener runs came the heavy gunships, each one carrying a cargo of infantry. Thunderhawks, Stormbirds and Fire Raptors thrust through the defensive cordons, their bolters hammering and downthrusters flaring. Many were destroyed, smashed apart by shells launched from the static positions, but dozens more got through, blasting their way under the shadow of the great ship docks. Once past the portals, the Fire Raptors unlocked their own close-range armory, and the enemy positions were momentarily lost behind rippling waves of neon white. Thunderhawks powered through the whirling debris, sinking down across the colossal docking plates to unload breacher squads. Stormbirds with heavier armor and heavier payloads pushed on further still, absorbing concentrated fire to reach their deployment points. Transporters set down behind the beachheads, disgorging assault tanks, troop carriers, and mobile gun platforms. Bolstered by the building torrent of fixed ordnance, fast attack squads of White Scar's legionaries raced out from their embarkation points, charging through the juddering rain of defensive fire. They broke the first bulwark circles, storming gun pits and pushing onwards, clearing room for more squads to move up and contribute to the onslaught. More heavy guns were swung down from the gaping holds of the hovering transporters, and the rain of artillery from deeper inside the void port was answered by punishing fire from the attackers. Every strike was fast, hard, relentless, coordinated, just as the Legion had always enjoyed, albeit now tempered by years in the crucible of grinding civil war. Docks 4 and 5, the outermost tendrils of iron reaching out into the abyss, were swiftly taken, their berthing zones overrun and strong points established. Dock 3 was soon severely contested, though savage resistance from dug-in Emperor's Children legionaries halted the advance. Fighting soon spread to the refit yards equipped for void-going behemoths, lighting up the towering grav cranes and railheads. Immense flying gantries and lifter coils were lit by the flash and flare of munitions, then obscured by the roiling palls of smoke coiling up through the dock's atmosphere bubble. As the Emperor's Children deployed extra forces to Dock 5, opening up a second front along the right flank of the White Scar's advance, the Wild Riders of the 5th Legion launched their planned second wave assault, squads of grav speeders and jet bikes held in reserve during the initial impact and now let loose. The speeders shrieked out across the burning quays, streaking past advancing infantry and breaking deep into the maw of darkness beyond. More heavy transports braved the halo of anti-ship fire to reinforce the growing beachhead. Land raiders were dropped from the caged hulls of Thunderhawk transporters, hitting the deck plates heavily before trundling forwards, their las cannons splitting beams deep into the heart of the enemy lines. Sikaran battle tanks thundered to attack speed, rocking wildly as they smashed through the smoking ruins of static defences. Ever more attack speeders were dropped into position and shot off immediately, swerving and skidding through the oncoming barrage. Soon, the fighting reached the inner dock gates, six Aquila-crowned moors, Gothic-arched, each one large enough to take an escort-class void ship deep within the precincts of the Keystone's innards. They were all burning now, their soaring pillars cracked and their outer blast bulwarks underlit red by repeated mortar strikes. As the 5th Legion closed in on their target, the full weight of the installed infantry defence was loosed against them. Empress Children tactical squads, reinforced by mortal battalions taken from traitor army regiments, supported by their own hastily landed tank groups and armoured walkers. Lapis-crowned Devastator squads took up vantage points on either side of the gates and swiftly turned them into scrap-choked kill zones. Battle-hardened 3rd Legion infantry groups crunched their way into close contact with the advance units of the Brotherhoods, and a front of hand-to-hand combat broke out under the very shadow of the looming portals. Amid the whine and boom of the artillery barrage, the older weapons of blade and bolter reaped their toll in a vicious, eternal symmetry of murder. The 5th Legion gained the most traction here, pushing towards the entrance halls into the Keystone itself, seizing gunpoint after gunpoint and turning the cannons against the defenders set further back. Phalanxes of land raiders thundered down the centre of the battlefield, crunching over the corpses of the vanquished and running down those fleeing the vortex of slaughter. In their wake, ever more infantry poured into the breaches, searing with flame what had not already been obliterated by las cannon fire. Assault squads soared across the smouldering killing plains, their jump packs whining on a shimmering heat haze, before the warriors slammed to earth, lashing out with chainsword and bolt pistol. And yet, just as the vanguard looked to gain the first of the inner dock gates, Hoarfrost spears slammed down, riven from the skin of reality and twisted into the physical forms of lightning and storm wind. Deck plates were pulverized, radial shockwaves boomed across the battlefield, hurling warriors from their feet and sending armored walkers staggering. Forks of snaking ether residue blazed out and green-edged clouds of plasma bloomed against the fires. Purple and gold warriors strode from the heart of the unnatural storm, moving purposefully and without haste, slowly fanning out, making no attempt to avoid the ranks of armor grinding their way to their positions. The newcomers bore the ancient livery of Chemos, though in more ornate patterns than their tactical brethren, and their plate shimmered from the wretch-inducing stink of the warp. Each warrior held a pendulous organ gun, shackled by linked chains and glistening cables. As one, the baroque mutants of the cacophony reached their allotted positions, lowered the muzzle of their devices, picked their targets, and fired. What emerged did not deserve the name sound. There were no words in the tongues of mortal men adequate to describe what could now be unleashed by Fulgrim's disciples, for the instruments of hypersensation created more than just auditory hell. Acting in concert, massed sonic blasts smeared across the artificial atmosphere of the void port, in reality distorting waves of molecular annihilation. The advancing 5th Legion Outrider squads were thrown back, flung clear of the exploding cover all around them. Troops too close were obliterated instantly, disappearing in spiraling whirls of blood and armor flecks. Landing plates cracked, tilting crazily as grav compensators whined, straining to fight the terrifying forces raging across them. Advancing armor formations shuddered to a halt, lodging amid what shelter remained, and launching everything they had at the cacophony spearhead. Second wave tactical squads advance behind the uncertain tank cover, their helms automatically dampening the mutilating levels of distortion washing over the battlefield. Even that was not enough when the sonic weapons scored direct hits, in which case power armor was ripped clean apart, warriors stunned into a bloody coma even as their helm lenses imploded and internal organs ruptured. The Emperor's Children assault squads launched a counterattack, protected by the voracious screen of psychosonics radiating out before them. The White Scars were driven back, losing numbers across ground only newly won, their advance blunted by the hell shock of such unnatural weaponry. More ether spears smacked into the ruptured rockcrete and adamantium, each one smashing itself apart to reveal a fresh wave of elite warriors. From the greatest rift of all strode the glittering outline of the Soul Severed, his armor blazing with afterlight from the realm immaterial, his thunder hammer shimmering, his golden helm a miasma of dancing illumination. Lord Commander Eidolon, the proudest of his proud breed, turned his pitiless helm across the ruined detritus of the tank advance, opened his agonized throat, and screamed. The devastation surpassed anything unleashed by his brothers. Reality split open, seared from its foundations by the release of physics-defying warp harmonics. Eidolon had grown since his resurrection, his might augmented to match his ancient arrogance. The brutal shockwave tore out, driving a path of annihilation through whatever stood in its way, bisecting the hulls of stranded tanks, cracking armor, smashing skulls, and bursting blood vessels. The entire deck level reeled, casting warriors from their feet and causing grav speeders to plow into the plunging metal. Palls of smoke swelled up from the carnage, underlit with racing fires and shredded by follow-up blasts. The assault might have foundered then, faced with such elemental ruin. The beachhead might have crumbled into nothing, hammered back to the ingress points and hurled into the burning void beyond. However, the forward push had won the Fifth Legion enough time to bring Lance of Heaven within teleportation range. Even as Eidolon laid waste to the docks, the immense profile of the battleship loomed up from the fires beyond, its gunnery banks thundering against the swarm of enemy craft about it, its prow yet bearing the white and gold. More shafts of other light coiled and spat, this time amid the ranks of the beleaguered White Scars. Columns of pure ether essence roared into existence, each one silhouetting the form of a warrior within. These were greater in stature than any yet, standing tall in pearl-white armor embellished with swirls of gold and red. One by one, they took their place, wielding powered glaives whose hooked blades of purest silver burned with electric blue light. Their ivory plate gleamed in defiance of the blood and muck around them, and was adorned with the tribal marks of lost Chogoris and decorated with fluttering prayer scrolls. As they emerged from their cocoons of fire, the massed legionaries of the Ordu thrust their tulwars into the burning atmosphere, a glittering sea of steel.
"Kagan!" they roared. "Ordu Gamana Jagatai!"
The greatest of the new arrivals, resplendent in his ornate gold-chased dragon helm, said nothing, but angled his fire-wreathed blade into the heart of the maelstrom. About him materialized the Zardian Aga of the Horde, those whom the Imperium had named Storm Seers, the bringers of the tempest. They hoisted their skull staves against the tumult, and the sound-tortured storm was rent asunder as the two cataclysms slammed into one another. Amid those ranks of bone-white psychers marched one who was set apart, whose armor was crimson, and whose gauntlets ran with black-edged flame. About him, the tearing winds blew strongest, and when he lifted his arms to contest the sound madness, the explosion of countervailing warp mastery leveled the terrain for 50 meters. With his final strength gathered, the dragon helm finally spoke. Even as the hurricane of noise poured across the battlefield, his voice pierced the cacophony, as sharp and clear as the sapphire skies of the Altak.
"You have sight of the enemy," he said, breaking into the heavy charge that would carry him to the Lord Commander. "His neck is bared. Now, sever it."